Things Unseen.
Brother Jerry, Lord bless you.
Well, thank you, Brother Ron. Your sister city in Portland, the class always selects a monthly text for greetings, and they want their love sent here to Salem, particularly from 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 24. Only fear the Lord and serve him in truth with all your heart, for consider how great things he hath done for you. We are looking forward to the Salem Convention here soon. And don't forget Portland Convention in August. We hope to see many or all of you, if possible, in August as well. But we'll first meet in Salem, and we're looking forward to that very much. You know, I've been very impressed with the human faculties. We have five senses by which we know the world. Your sight, your hearing, your taste, your smell, your touch. But I was remembering particularly a lady that was born in the 1800s, Helen Keller, without sight and without hearing. Can you imagine a person born that's never saw their mother's face, never heard their mother's voice? And yet this woman, a little girl, baby, was very disoriented at first. How do you know the world? But through her three other senses that she had, she gradually learned about the world around her. She graduated from university. She wrote books. Can you imagine never having seen a word on a page? Never seen another human face? To start writing histories. I remember something that Brother Ed Lorenz mentioned one time about his father, who was a very assertive father, particularly about the truth and so forth. But in his later years, he lost his hearing. And Brother Ed said, when my dad lost his hearing, his father said, I'm beginning to hear as I never heard before. Sometimes our physical senses get in the way of reality. I almost named this talk the sixth sense, something beyond the physical senses. Well, we have a text in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 18. While we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And this text was used as a Songs of the Night a couple of nights ago. Temporal, material, and physical things are transitory, temporary. That which is we see with the eye of faith will endure eternally. It's a basic lesson we have today, but one which we grow older, we become more connected with the things that are real and vital, more than the temporal, material things. There's a companion text in Matthew 6, verses 19 to 22. You know all these texts. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust does corrupt, and where thieves do not break through and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye be single, your whole body will be full of light. Well, brethren, it's not only moth and rust, but also time and strength take their toll on this material world. The world of commercialism, technology, style, superiority tell us that we all need and deserve something more. A vacation, new clothes, upgrade your smartphone, take next year's car model, a collection of gold and silver coins, and a new house to put it all in. We're not saying that material things are unnecessary. In fact, they are the very tools of this life. It's the only tools we have are such things, but they are still things. It seems from infancy, children are attempting to define themselves in a physical world. This is not strange, as our world is a physical world. The five senses interpret everything: mother's voice, her fragrance, the warm fire, light, and color. For a moment, have you ever seen a little child, maybe even a baby, cover his eyes to exercise his imagination for a moment and the world of his mind? And then he peeks out from behind his eyes, behind his hands, and he uncovers his eyes to see new smiling faces, fascinating flowers, the clouds, a blue sky. And then he covers his eyes again to exercise his imagination. Something beyond what he just saw. Let the mind work beyond the physical. Later in life, he defines only things by what he has heard and seen. And he begins to say something about my voice, my appearance, my music, my clothes, my reputation. People visit Facebook to be seen and to be heard, and to see others and to hear others. All these things begin to replace the powers of the unseen with only that which we physically see. These are not evil in themselves, but they are not the end of the story, nor even do they tell the whole story. It is not the material things, nor even their possession, that is the problem. It's our attitude, with their use or with their abuse, that makes the difference. It is whether we let the things of this life define us, or whether we use them to define a larger reality. The power of the unseen is soon overshadowed by the unseen in our lives. You could imagine the sounds, the faces and places while sharing the laughter and tears of others. The drama of another's experience moves us to venture to walk in their shoes. Men and women of courage and principle dare to ask, where do I go? We learn some of these things by reading, by books, by the adventure of others' lives, and we imagine walking with them. So the mind can see a reality of what eyes cannot see, and where you have never been. Think for a moment of the power of ideas. Brother Russell, speaking of the restoration of Israel, says on volume 3, page 263, and he says the same thing in reprint 615. He says, nations are born from ideas. What's such a simple expression? Nations are born from ideas. But think about it. Theodor Herzl had an idea for a homeland for Jews. Then he wrote and acted upon the idea. Chaim Weizmann and Ben-Gurion moved on the idea that Herzl presented with courage, and they followed in his shoes. And a nation was born. It was born not just because someone imagined it, but because their ideas were founded on divine promises. Oh, yes. So the Word of God enlightens the eyes to see another reality that has not yet existed. Eliezer ben Yehuda dreamed to reinvent the Hebrew language for a singular people, regathered from the four corners of the earth. And that language is modern Hebrew. So unseen dreams become real only with divine promises. You know that memory is only in the mind, and yet it is as real as the events that first occurred. Sister Sharon and I were reflecting a little bit about the early years in Salem here and Portland, but they all came from a memory. It was just a little electrical, chemical action in the brain that still lingered. Yet your memory is unseen by others who were never there. Truthful testimony is taken as fact in a court of law. The fragrance of a rose lingers eternally after the petals perish. The loss of a beloved companion stays in our mind, in our heart. You know, my father was what we call a literalist. If he couldn't see it or he couldn't feel it, then it was doubtful that it was real. So he missed the reality of the unseen. Pursuing the unseen has discovered what the eye never saw, but which the mind dared to believe. It was so with Galileo and Newton and Einstein and Columbus, those who found the backside of the moon. They found what the eye had never seen. Now, what has any of this to do with the consecrated Christian? There's a little expression in Proverbs 29, verse 18, where there is no vision, the people perish. This could apply to the message of the judges and the prophets, but equally applies to spiritual vision. We read in Habakkuk, that little book of Habakkuk, chapter 2, verse 2 and 3, write the vision and make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. You know what that means, but a person of the world would say, you're speaking double talk. It doesn't mean anything. A vision doesn't talk, but it does. To the physical eye, the chart of the ages is but lines and patterns. To the spiritual eye, it is a map of history and prophecy. It speaks. Matthew 13, verse 17. Jesus said, for verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see, and have not seen them, and to hear those things which you hear, and have not heard them. Why? They have ears just like you do. Yet imagination is a rich source for either self-persuasion or delusion. Some invent their own solutions and explanations. So we need to clarify and carefully confer with the designer of his sacred word. Jeremiah 23, verse 28. The prophet that hath a dream, let him tell a dream. But he that hath my word, let him speak my word faithfully. The dream or the word? Imagination or facts? What is the chaff to the wheat, saith the Lord? Well, there's a lot of chaff in this world, but the word of the Lord is real. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I usually don't drink very much, but get a little frog. What is the wheat to the chaff to the wheat? This consulting is not only reading and examining, but must be accompanied with prayer. This is another unseen channel. What is prayer? There are no wires. There's no lightning flashes from heaven. Even as caught the attention of the Apostle Paul when he was blinded. Yet we reach up with thoughts and words that transcend the bounds of space and atmosphere and even time. You know, prayer travels faster than light. Instantaneous. Where is God in this universe? You know, the universe is measured in light years on how many years it takes light to travel. But not your prayers. Because we know that the Almighty hears. This is unseen. Psalms 20, verse 6. Now know I, the Lord, saveth his anointed. He will hear him. Oh, thank you, dear. He will hear him from his holy heaven with the saving strength of his right hand. And 1 Kings 8, verse 30. Hearken thou to the supplication of thy servant and of thy people Israel, when they shall pray towards this place, and hear thou in heaven. Hear in heaven thy dwelling place, and when thou hearest, forgive. Prayer is more like the wind explained to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, which is known only by observed effects, like the wind. For fleshly eyes cannot see the movement of heavenly powers themselves. Yes, Adam heard a divine voice in the garden. Noah, Abraham, Joseph, Moses, Daniel, all had some evidence of for their five senses. But even they did not have spiritual vision. First Corinthians 2, 9 and 10. But as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that serve him. But God hath revealed them to us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. You know, one of the great lessons of Job was that experience teaches something beyond verbal instruction. Instruction teaches us history, rules, and facts, and that's why we go to school. They give us a list of facts. But sometimes we forget them. We don't use them. But experience is another teacher. Experience teaches humility. It teaches submission, heart loyalty. It teaches us to use what we have heard. So we read in Job chapter 42, verse 5. This is at the end of his experience. After all of his troublous years and experiences and troubles, he says, I have heard thee by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye seeth thee. He wasn't speaking about he saw some physical vision. He says, my eye perceives and understands. Now I understand. These eyes of understanding taught us something of the Almighty and of our own smallness. And it taught Job of his own smallness and insufficiency. This is seen only by standing in his light and not our own. People tend to define their own world and say, this is where I am. This is what I see. This is what's true. But sometimes you need to stand beside someone else. You need to stand in their light, in what they understand. And this is the way it is with the truth. We are standing still in the light of the harvest message, the present truth that was once delivered to the saints before us. We stand in the light that he has given. Psalms 36, verse 9. For with thee is the fountain of life. In thy light we shall see light. Only as he has shed light. It's like standing under a big lamppost, and it enlightens everything that is around us. But it has to be his light. This has nothing to do with standing outside at noon under the sun, but neither is this light seen only when busily attending to the mundane matters of the day. In fact, there's a poem. It's also hymn number 228, but it's in Hymns of Dawn, page 78. Just a few lines from that poem. Even sorrow touched by heaven grows bright with more than rapture's ray. As darkness shows us worlds of light we never saw by day. So sometimes you understand something about the Creator standing outside at night and looking at the stars, and suddenly you see a light of truth, of the magnitude of the Creator that you could never see at noonday. Proverbs 20, verse 12. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord hath made both of them. He made our senses, but he made them to use us to go beyond those five. Even as Helen Keller dared to do. Yet we read in Matthew 13:13-14. Therefore, speak I to them in parables, Jesus said, because they seeing not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing ye shall hear, and shall not understand, and seeing ye shall see, and not perceive. So sometimes the five senses do not lead someone to really see and to really hear. It seems the eyes and ears are given to begin a journey of understanding. Yet we are invited to read between the lines, so to speak, to find a deeper meaning beyond a parable or a proverb. Still, some need a measure of tangible evidence before handling the invisible. And so it was with Thomas. You remember Thomas, John 20:27-29. Then saith he to Thomas, reach hither thy finger, and behold my hands, and reach hither thy hand, and thrust it in my side, and be not faithless, but believing. And Thomas answered and said unto him, my Lord and my God. Jesus saith unto them, Thomas, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen and have yet believed. Imagine that. Now, with the spirit of the gospel age, we may say with Apostle Peter in 1 Peter 1, verse 8, whom having not seen you love, in whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. So all this has to do with the definition of faith. We all can quote Hebrews 11 verse 1 from memory. You know, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. It is not so much faith that needs defining. This is belief, it's conviction, it's assurance. But what is that substance? The evidence that makes it a fact. The substance is not so much the loaves and the fishes, or even the stone tables of Moses. The substance is the essential glue of truth that holds the promises and prophecies from the Creator for His creation. Here is truth. Here is something solid. It is surety, and it brings confidence. Romans 8, verse 24. For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man sees, why does he yet hope for it? We hope for those things that will be. Faith is based on the integrity and the veracity of He who promises. The evidence is the consistent testimony and harmony of the multiple witnesses to that testimony. But it is also the proof that can be examined, verified, and tested with experience. The plan of the ages is true because it is a global solution. Not for a few, but for all. Abraham is called the father of the faithful for a good reason. Acts 7, verse 3 and 5. And God said unto him, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come unto a land which I shall show thee. And he, God, gave him no inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on, yet he promised that he would give him it to him for a possession, and to his seed after him, yet he had no child. Ah, a promise. I was just reflecting, not part of the lesson, but I was reflecting recently on Abraham. How would he think? He's sitting there in Ur of the Chaldees in Babylon. He's got a good home. He's got lots of flocks and herds. He's got servants. It's a good life, early retirement. But Abraham said, it's not enough. There's something more to this life. And God says, leave. So what did Abraham say? Did he say, God, give me a contract. Tell me how this land is. Well, how many grape vineyards are there? And have I got a home waiting for me? He knew no one. God says, I will show you. Just leave. That's really something. That's faith. And so it was faith also that he says that all these flocks and herds and home in Babylon were not enough. There is something more, and I must discover it. I must travel to a new land. Some may say that that Abraham missed the promise. He died never having received any of it. But there, those that say that, their vision is too narrow. Faith says he will yet personally realize that promise. When awakened from the dead and rule with other ancient worthies and prophets and patriarchs when all nations will go up to Jerusalem for kingdom blessings. That is the unseen truth that Abraham waited for. I want to relate some aspects of Abraham's life. The evidence is in Genesis records and in his choices. He was wealthy and residing, as we mentioned, near to the first settlements after the deluge, after the flood. His forefather, Noah, had died just 2 years before Abraham was born. Surely Terah, his father, told him what we have recorded in Hebrews 11, verse 7. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not yet seen, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Abraham grew and waited in the shadow of a greater patriarch and benefactor that he never met. Abraham never met Noah, but Noah was a friend of God, and his father Terah told him about Noah. Now another generation forgot the spirit of Noah, and so God told Abraham to move, but where? To a land God would show him. But first he and his father would visit the town where his older brother had died, even while Terah yet lived. They waited in Haran, that's the brother, until Terah died at 205 years old, and Abraham was 75. Brother Haran having died, Abraham was now the oldest remaining brother, along with his younger brother, Nahor. The birthright and legacy of faith was now his to confirm as head of the family. First, they travel through Canaan during a famine and proceed southward to Egypt. We remember Abraham's travel to Egypt and Pharaoh's attention to Sarah. God allowed human schemes to proceed, but never to disrupt the divine program. But there was more. Is it possible that he saw also, when he went to Egypt, did he see the stone pyramid? Maybe Abraham did. The testimony in stone left by a shepherd king, his own forefather. We may suppose this monument at the border of Egypt confirmed Abraham's faith in the God of heaven, whose plan is sure. God now brought him to the promised land where one living son of Noah should be honored. Shem was the last living person of those who passed over the waters into the new world. Shem had not only worked on the ark, but also arranged the building of stone. He is likely the priest and king of Salem, another Salem, Jerusalem, taking the title Melchizedek, the righteous king. Where should Abraham go? He went to a land of his grandfather's father's father, to a land he had never seen from Ur of the Chaldees, but was now led forth by faith to higher ground. His nephew Lot chose a lush material valley. Abraham literally went to the high hills through arid and desert lands to feed his flocks. The material world in Sodom and Gomorrah proved a curse to his nephew Lot and for that family. Abraham rose to rescue him once in the hand from the hands of their enemies, and later when Sodom perished. Melchizedek, or we presume to be Shem, watched with careful eyes how this great, great, great grandson would perform. Abraham gave to this magistrate king the honor of tithes, and he, Melchizedek, in turn gave Abraham the emblems of bread and wine as the essential legacy of that would mark others of the faith of Abraham in the memorial emblems. Even then, he gave bread and wine to Abraham and to the seed of Abraham during a greater Passover. After years of waiting, Sarah gave birth to their first child, a promise, and she was 90 years old. He was 100. Isaac surely was a child of faith and promise. Sometime God waits for our faith to mature before we see the fruits of the promise. It would be noticed that Shem lived 502 years after the flood and died when he was 600 years old. It is easy enough to compute that he was still living when Isaac was born. In fact, he died just 10 years after Isaac and Rebekah were married. Even time to see the birthright of faith passed to a new generation in the new world. All the time, Abraham had not received the land of promise. He had to purchase a small plot with a cave in Hebron to bury his beloved Sarah. They lived and journeyed toward a city of promise, yet unseen. Jesus said in John chapter 8, verse 56, "Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad." Abraham saw and believed and acted according to future things. The unseen Messiah became the hope of every Jewish generation. But because they had become materialistic and self-centered, most were looking for a mighty king and missed the humble lamb of sacrifice. I remember Sister Rose Knockert would quote this and then say, "And this generation are looking for him to come to a flesh in the flesh, and they missed that he's returned as a king." Matthew 23:37. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often I would gather thy children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, but you would not. Yet a few of the lost sheep of the house of Israel did have those eyes to see and ears to hear, who the world knew not." And we read in Romans chapter 4, a few verses, 13 and 16 particularly, Romans 4. "For the promise that he should be heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. Therefore it is of faith that it might be by grace, to the end the promise might be sure to all the seed, not only to that which is of the law, but to also to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all." All the journey of the seven churches in this gospel age have been looking for and waiting for what? For a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And the foundations of the wall of the city were garnished with all manner of precious stones. And I saw no temple therein, for God, the Lord God Almighty, and the Lamb are the people of it. And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine on it. For the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. These are from Hebrews 11:10 and several verses from Revelation 21. So, brethren, the city, this city, is not to be found in the kingdoms of this world. But can you imagine it with your spiritual eyes enlightened with the word of prophecy and promise? If so, it is more real than all the protected bank accounts, all the electoral votes, all the ecclesiastical pomp and pride, all the swords and engines of war. This is another city. And therefore you know that quote in volume one, close your eyes. Close your eyes for a moment to the scenes of misery and woe, degradation and sorrow that yet prevail on account of sin, and picture before your mental vision the glory of the perfect earth. You cannot do it with your eyes too open to this world. You close them and see the vision of faith. The vision is written in the chart of the ages. But Joseph saw this day. Isaiah saw this day. Daniel saw this day. But they had to look over the heads of others. In fact, Daniel looked over the heads of lions. He had to look higher than that dungeon, looking through prison bars. Some see mud, some see stars. The Greek word apokalypsis means unveiling, revealing. Then natural eyes will be opened to the physical evidence of the new kingdom order at that time. Old kingdoms will die. Human death will cease. The dead risen. Righteous rules will be enforced. The desert will blossom. Israel will be subject to the new order. Truth will be heard. Satan restrained. And mankind will wake up to the new rule and the new ruler. They will wake from 6,000 years of nightmares. But the experience will be worth it. It is interesting that apokalypsis is preceded and introduced with the words parousia and epiphania. The watchers first see the return. Only the watchers. The new king, his authority to judge, dismiss, expose, bring in knowledge, information, and resources and the infrastructure for the new day. And that's what's happening around us at this very time. Bringing in knowledge and information and the new resources. Still, there are others who think the new rule and ruler of the kingdom only will begin when the apocalypsis occurs. Some think that we are still in the sixth day, waiting for the Sabbath of millennium. We see otherwise. The new day has already begun. It's still nighttime for the world, but the new day has begun for you. The world sees the outward trouble, but not the cause. Israel is increasingly materialistic and isolated. Islam is spreading with violence and terror to the non-Muslim world. Turkey grieves the loss of the Ottoman Empire and is reasserting its ancient dream. Russia will stop at nothing to expand its global dominance. Catholics, Orthodox, Protestants seek collaboration. Global economy is about to collapse from false values and unpayable debts. America has lost its integrity among the nations. Crime and violence, demonism, and fear proliferate. No wonder that even some of the consecrated are confused whether or not the millennial reign has begun. Yet those who see the prophecies can now see between the lines that are seen and the things that are unseen. So we will conclude with a few texts in Isaiah. Isaiah 2:19. And they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the Lord and for the glory of his majesty when he ariseth to shake terribly the earth. Isaiah 8:12. Say ye not a confederacy to all them to whom this people shall say a confederacy, neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. Isaiah 34:4. And all the hosts of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down as the leaf falls off the vine, as a falling fig from the fig tree. Ezekiel 7:19. They shall cast their silver into the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. These prophets saw the new day and the new ruler dispensing the old. And then there's that text in James 5:4. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which of you is kept back by fraud, crieth in the, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered in the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When its branch is tender and puts forth leaves, you know the summer is near. And Jeremiah 42:10. If ye will still abide in this land, then will I build you and not pull you down, and will plant you and not pluck you up. This is what's happening with Israel. Even some within fear being plucked up. What more do we see in the world around us of the Lord's great army, the valley of dry bones? Is Israel being prepared to look upon him whom they pierced? What about the surrounding armies of Psalms 83 and Ezekiel 38 and Zechariah 14, when the Lord plagues all who come to fight against Jerusalem, but followed by the blessing of all who will go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts? Oh, all this is unseen. Unseen by the world, but your eyes see something of these things. Hymn number 30 has this phrase, earth can yet but read the story of his cross and dying pain, but soon shall behold his glory, for he cometh now to reign. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see and have not seen them, and to hear those things which you hear and have not heard them. Matthew 13:16-17. So, dear brethren here in Salem and everywhere, Take courage. Don't faint. For we are standing on Zion's hill and watching with different eyes. The unseen will soon be revealed and be seen. Amen.